أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا أبو القاسم محمد
اللهم صل على محمد وآل
محمد وعلى آل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين السلام عليكم brothers and sisters It's my honor to be here to speak in front of you. Tonight is the last night before the 10th of Ashura, before Ashura, the 10th of Muharram. Inshallah, these speeches have been beneficial. Inshallah, we've gained things, I've gained things, you've gained things that could help us to get closer to Allah. And I pray that this speech and tomorrow's speech, which will be the last speech, will also be beneficial. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
And let's give a couple loud salawats for the reappearance of Imam Zaman.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
Different reasons why Imam Hussein sacrificed his life. For the majority of the reasons that we've given have been social, political reasons. Today I'm gonna go into one that's more spiritual, a spiritual reason behind his uprising, a reason that we could bring into our lives, and if we think about it, if we realize every day, every second, if we have this in our minds, it will help us to get closer to Allah. And this reason is that believers are being tested. That there's always a test. We're tested 24 hours a day. And we have to keep this in our minds. If we keep this in our minds, it'll help us to get closer to Allah. Now, Imam Hussein alayhi salam, his uprising was a test for the believers of his time. For us as well. But for the believers of that time, we'll discuss it. Those who said that they were true believers, those who said that they followed the commandments of Allah, that they followed Rasulullah, those people on that day were tested. They were tested to see would they be with Imam Hussein or would they be with Yazid. All of those people who heard the Prophet say such good things about Imam Hussein alayhi salam, they said, Hussein is from me and I am from Hussein. It said Hussein is the leader of, or the master of the youth of paradise. That there's numerous hadiths in praise of Imam Hussein. All of the Muslims who heard that, to that day was their test. To see if they would be with Hussein, if they would sacrifice everything with Hussein alayhi salam, or not. Would they remain indifferent, or worse, would they join Yazid's army? They were people who expressed the desire of martyrdom, the desire to become shaheed. They said, I wish I had the opportunity to fight in Badr, in Uhud, in Khandaq, in Khaybar, in Siffin, in the Battle of Jemaa. They wished that they fought in those wars, or if they fought in those wars, they wished they would have been killed. They would have reached the station of Shahadat. This day was a test for them. To see if they were true to their words, to see if they practiced what they preached, to see if they would join Imam Hussein and become shaheed, or if they would stay home and not. This was a very difficult test as well. One of the leaders of the Islamic world who's giving speeches in this month of Muharram, I was listening to his speeches, he said that this test was the hardest test imaginable. The reason being, because those who pass the test, they're given the highest levels of paradise. But those who fail the test, they're in the lowest, lowest parts of hell. The result of this test is so, you know, important. This was one of the reasons that Imam Hussein rose up. Now for us, this test is twofold. Because first, we have to see if we're on the side of the Husseins of today. We're tested. There's people who support Imam Hussein. There's people who live like Imam Hussein. We have to be on their side. We can't be indifferent to them. We can't join their enemies. This is how we're tested. Also, because we have an Imam. Imam Zaman alayhi salam is our Imam. He's alive today, right now. We have duties towards him. We also say the same things that the Muslims of those times said. We say, when Imam Zaman comes, we say we will be with him. Which one of us says when Imam Zaman comes, we're going to be against him? All of us say when he comes back, we're going to be in his army. When he comes back, I wish I would get the opportunity to fight alongside and be killed protecting him. How many of us have this desire? Just like the Muslims at that time. So we have to be careful that we're truthful to our desires. We have to be careful that when that time comes, we will stand up. We will be like the companions of Hussein alayhi salam. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala. As in previous nights, normally what I like to do is I like to express the reasons of Imam Hussein's uprising from his own words. Because I think it gives it emphasis, it shows the importance. Now, before Imam Hussein left for Medina, left Medina for Kufa and stopped in Karbala, he was asked to stay. A couple of people told him, don't leave. It's going to be dangerous. Don't leave, you're going to be killed. Don't leave, we could try to fix things from here. Imam Hussein answered them. In previous nights I showed you some of the answers, tonight is another answer. Imam Hussein alayhi salam, it's narrated that he said, إِذَا أَقَمْتُ فِي مَقَانِي, if I stay in my place, if I stay here, فَبِمَا يَمْتَحَنُوا هَذَا الْخَلْقِ, what will these people be tested with? بِمَاذَا يَخْتَبَرُونَ, what will they be tested with? So being tested, testing the Ummah, testing the Muslims, was one of the reasons with his own words. He expressed it. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala. Now this issue of testing, I want to delve into this a little bit. Divine tests. It's a very important issue. It's an issue that we could form our lives around. It's something that's very important. I'm going to go over a few verses of the Quran, and then we're going to delve into this deeper. The first verse, I'm just going to read the English translation of it. It says, do you suppose that you will be left alone? This is Allah talking to us. Do you suppose that you will be left alone, and Allah has yet to ascertain if you would wage jihad, if you would sacrifice everything? If you would stand up when you need to stand up. Do you suppose you'll be left alone when this hasn't happened yet? He continues, do you suppose you'll be left alone when it's not ascertained if you would call on those besides Allah and His Apostle and the believers as confidence? We'll be tested. We'll be tested by our actions. We'll be tested with our faith. We'll be tested who we support and who we stand up against. These are tests that will happen. Allah is promising us. Then Allah ends the verse by saying, and Allah knows well of what you do. Remember in a few nights ago I said these end parts of the verses are very important? That when we read a verse, we look at the end and we have to figure out how this end part of the verse correlates to what the verse is saying. Whenever we read the Quran, we should think about this. The Quran commands us to ponder upon the verses, to think about His signs. This is one of the ways. So when Allah is saying, Allah is well aware of what you do in this verse, it means that He knows if you're going to pass this test or not. He knows what you're going to do. He knows if you're truthful to yourself if you're truthful in your hearts or not, or if you're just saying it. If you're just saying, you know, if I was alive at Imam Hussein's time, I would definitely have been in his army. If you're just saying that, or if you truly mean it, Allah knows, and we have to work on ourselves to be there. There's another verse. It says, أَحَسَّ بِنَاسَ أَنْ يَتَرَكُّوا أَنْ يَقُودُوا أَمَنُوا وَهُمْ لَا يُفْتَنُونَ. It says, do you suppose that Allah will leave you by just saying that you believe and you won't be tested? No. Allah is going to test you. He's going to test me. He's going to test the prophets. He tests everybody. Testing, being tested, this examination is something that we call a divine sunnah. Divine sunnahs are very important. Divine sunnahs are laws which are unchangeable. They're laws which Allah created to rule the universe by. There's a number of examples of divine sunnahs which are mentioned in the Quran. One of them is this, the examination. Another one is that a nation will not become better unless they change themselves. A change comes from within. This is another divine sunnah. Another one is victory will be given to the believers. The believers will be victorious. This is another divine sunnah. So right now we're talking about this one, the divine sunnah of examination. This divine sunnah also shows us an important point, that mankind has free will. This is one way, we all know that we have free will, but this is one way that we could, you know, strengthen this belief in our hearts. Because why would Allah test us if we didn't have free will? How would that make sense? If we're tested and Allah forces us to either pass or fail, then, you know, what's the purpose of being tested at all? So this proves that we have free will. Salawat ala Muhammad wa Muhammad. Now, when we look into the history, in the time of Imam Hassan al-Islam, Imam Hassan was forced to make a peace treaty with Muawiyah. Why was he forced to do this? Why wasn't he able to stand up and fight? I told you before, we've been discussing question answers and in the speeches, that there's two reasons. One reason is because Muawiyah was different than Yazid. Muawiyah presented himself as a Muslim, where Yazid didn't. Second reason is that Imam Hassan al-Islam did not have enough followers. Imam Hussein only had a handful, less than 100. But Imam Hassan al-Islam didn't even have that. So he was unable to stand up. He was forced to make a peace treaty. Now when he made this peace treaty, so many people complained. Why are you doing this? If you're the rightful leader, how can you make a peace treaty with Muawiyah? You know, this shows us that you're not the rightful leader. People complained, left and right. And he had to give answers, and the imams after him had to give answers of why this was necessary, why he had to do this. In the time of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, people of Kufa, there's a narration that says they sent over 12,000 letters to Imam Hussein. Now, that number could be less or more, but it's a lot of letters. They sent thousands of letters to Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Why? Asking him to come to Kufa, to establish an Islamic government, to be our leader. We will protect you. We will fight with you. We will be the center of the Islamic world. This is what they're asking Imam Hussein. At this time, when it's so many people, Imam Hussein can't say no. He sends his representative. He sends Muslim ibn Akil. Muslim ibn Akil goes there. They say, yes, we're truthful. We will support Imam Hussein. We will protect him. We want him to come. Muslim ibn Akil sends the letter to Imam Hussein and says they're truthful, which we know what happened after that. Now Imam Hussein, what would have happened if Imam Hussein did not stand up? If Imam Hussein said, look, all these people that are sending these letters, they're not truthful. They're going to be the ones who are going to kill me. The army of Yazid didn't come from Damascus. The majority of the army of Yazid came from Kufa, were these people. But Imam Hussein, because of what they said, because they said we'll support them, he had to accept that, and for all of the other reasons that I've been mentioning over these last nights, he had to stand up and sacrifice himself. Now it's interesting, in our time, right now, the same type of things are said about Imam Zaman alayhi salam. We've heard the hadith, we've heard this number 313, where they say that once there's 313 people who are mu'min, who will support Imam Zaman, he will appear. Then a lot of people say, how can you say that only 313? There's not 313 people in this whole world right now? In this masjid, real strong mu'mins, we have a number of them here. In just Canoga Park, let alone all of the masjids of Los Angeles, of America, of the West, in Iran, the masjids in Iran are full. This day, if we have 200-300 people in our audience, mashallah. Over there, thousands and thousands and thousands of people in each masjid. When they do matam, the walls shake. And that's only Iran, Lebanon, Pakistan, the whole Islamic world. We don't have 313 people. People say that Imam Zaman should come back, that you have these followers. There is a famous speaker in Isfahan, which is a city in Iran. He would always speak about Imam Zaman alayhi salam and his reappearance, all the time. Every speech he gave, this was his subject. And he said in one of his speeches, this is narrated, he said in one of his speeches, that he said, you know, in Isfahan right now, in this masjid, there's 313 people. In this masjid right here. It's impossible to say that this hadith is correct. Imam Zaman should come back right now. We have the people, he needs to come. Then it said he went home. In his home, what's it called? This is a story that's narrated. It said that Imam Zaman came to him. Imam Zaman told him, so, you said we have 313 people. And he said, yes, Imam, we're ready. We're ready to serve you. He said, okay. Invite the 313 strongest people you know. Invite them to come tomorrow and meet me. So he went and he invited his friends, secretively, of course, to come and meet the Imam. And we're going to show him that we're strong, and then he's going to reappear. So they came to the courtyard. He had a house. It was a two-story house. And the story that was upstairs had stairs leading from his yard, and the people met in the yard. 313 people. Imam Zaman was in the room, you know, upstairs. So Imam Zaman said, call one of them to come up. The first person walks up the stairs. You hear a scream. And then you see blood fall down the stairs. So Imam Zaman says, send the second person up. Second person, a little slower, walks up. Again, a scream and more blood. Imam Zaman says, third person. Third person comes up, scream, blood. Then people start to get scared. People start to leave. People start to run away. What's happening here? By the fourth person, no one else was left. Everyone left. The owner of the house walks up the stairs. He sees the first three people sitting to the side and three dead sheep in front of the door. And he said, you say that these people are ready for me? They can't even walk up a flight of stairs. We have to be sure that what we say, we're really truthful in our hearts. Now you might say that that's just a story that happened in Iran. We have hadith that's similar to this. There's in the time of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. There was... There is a group of people from Khorasan who came and met with Imam Sadiq. They told him, look, we're ready. We have so many followers in Khorasan that's ready to fight with you. Let's go and take the government. You're the rightful leader. Let's go. We have enough people. Imam Sadiq said, really? How many people do you have? We have, you know, whatever thousands of people in Khorasan who are ready to die for you. We're ready to protect you. Imam Sadiq said, okay. You see this oven here? He opened the door and says, go sit in this oven. If you're truthful, if you say I'm the rightful leader and whatever I say you'll do, go sit in the oven. the person said, are you joking with me? What do you want me to sit in the oven? Imam Zadok said, yes. If you are truthful and you say that I'm the rightful leader and you will follow me no matter what I do, go sit in that oven. And the guy, he wouldn't sit in the oven, of course. Then one of Imam Sadiq's servants walked in. Imam Sadiq said, go sit in that oven. He went in, took his shoes off, sat in the oven, closed the door. Then Imam Sadiq starts speaking with this guy about you know, trivial things. Oh, so how's the weather in Khorasan? You know, what's going on over there? What are the people saying? And this person said, there's a man burning in the oven right here. You're asking about the weather. So then the imam opens the oven, the man walks out. He says, these thousands of people in Khorasan, are they like him? He said, no. We have to be truthful. We have to be true believers. When we say we follow the Imam, we have to follow him no matter what. When we say we're ready to give our lives, we have to really be ready to give our lives. In history, it's shown that a lot of people talk but don't act. Where we will be tested. With ourselves, we have to be truthful. If we're not at the level where we should be, we have to work on ourselves. I'm not at the level I have to be. I know I have to work on myself. Everybody needs to be truthful. Salawat ala Muhammad wa alayhi. If we say the salawats, make them real, inshallah. Now what happens if we pass the test? What happens if we're tested and we pass? We do what we're supposed to do. We stand up when we're supposed to stand up. We pass. Allah at this time promises us that we'll be victorious. He promises victory to the believers. In this world and the next. Not only in the next world, both in this world and the next. As I said, this is a divine sunnah. Victory of the believers is a divine sunnah. It's something that's unchangeable. It's a law that Allah rules and governs the universe by. And He mentions it throughout the Quran. I'll mention a few verses right now, and you'll see that throughout the Quran, this is a reoccurring theme. This is something that Allah wants to instill in our hearts. He wants to tell us, you're going to be tested. It's not going to be easy. Don't think that being a believer is easy. That you don't have to think about anything. That you don't have to struggle. You don't have to strive. Being a believer is difficult. It's a test. But if you pass, you're going to be victorious. You will be successful. The first verse is a verse that I've mentioned a few times so far. And it shows you that when truth comes, falsehood will vanish. It shows you when the faith appears, disbelief and falsehood and everything that's wrong, in and of itself, disappears and goes away. Allah says, وَقُلْ جَعَ الْحَقِّ وَزَهَقَ الْبَاطِلُ إِنَّ الْبَاطِلُ كَانَ زَهُوكَ. Say, the truth has come and falsehood has vanished. Verily, falsehood is bound to vanish. There's many other verses. There's another verse that Allah says that He is with the believers and that His party will be victorious. Those who are with Allah will be victorious. Clearly He says it. He says, وَمَا يَتَوَلَّ اللَّهُ وَرَسُولُهُ وَالَّذِينَ آمَنُوا فَإِنَّ حِزْبَ اللَّهِ هُمُ الْغَالِبُونَ. Those who take Allah and His Apostle and the believers as their guardians, they should know that Allah, that the victory, the party of God, Hezbollah, will be victorious. Clear, Allah is saying that you will be victorious. He's not leaving any room for doubt here. And He means in this world and the next. So don't only think the next world. In this world as well. Salawat ala Muhammad wa alayhi. There's another verse which says the believers will inherit the world. It says, وَلَقَدْ كَتَبْنَا فِي زَبُورٍ مِنْ بَعْدَ ذِكْرٍ. Certainly we wrote in the Psalms after the Torah, An al-ard yarithuha ibadiy as-salihun, that the earth will be inherited by my righteous servants. This is saying that the believers will be victorious in this world, on the earth, that Allah will give the governance and the control and the power of the world to His righteous servants. Now this is something that will definitely happen when Imam Zaman alayhi salam. No doubt about that. But it is also something that we should work towards by supporting Islamic governments, by promoting Islamic principles, by teaching everybody about Islam and showing them that Islam is the correct way of life, that Islam is what makes one successful, that Islam is what makes one prosperous. Showing the world this, we'll be moving closer and closer to the achievement of that verse, inshallah. The last verse that I'm going to mention is the verse that Imam Khomeini uses a lot in his speeches. So those of you who know Farsi and read his speeches, or listen to his speeches, I'm sure you've heard this. And those of you, it's also translated into Arabic, and a number of speeches are in English also, which you could read a book called Al-Kawthar in English. The verse is this, وَلَا تَحْنُوا وَلَا تَحْسَنُوا وَأَنْتُمْ الْعَلُونَ إِن كُنْتُمْ مُؤْمِنِينَ. Do not weaken, do not be grieved. You will have the upper hand. You will be successful. You will be on top if you are believers. If you are believers, إِن كُنْتُمْ مُؤْمِنِينَ. So Imam Khomeini, one time, he was speaking to a number of besieged. Do you guys know what besieged are? Besieged are the voluntary army forces in Iran. They're the people who, when Iraq attacked Iran, they're the people who fought against Saddam Hussein and Saddam Hussein's army. They're the people who protected Iran. Now, Imam Khomeini was addressing them, and he mentioned this verse. And then he said, what is important is faith. Faith is what's important. Iman, faith. And one manifestation of this faith is seen in you. And it's seen in you, brothers and sisters, as well. Then he says, what you guys did, this manifestation of faith, was able to destroy a huge dam. And he's talking about the Shah. It was able to destroy a huge dam, something that was unimaginable, something that people couldn't even fathom the thought of. It wouldn't even cross people's minds that an Islamic government would have been able to be established in Iran, that the Shah would lose power. It was something that seemed impossible. But Imam Khomeini is saying, because of faith, and faith alone, this was achieved. As the saying in English goes, faith can move mountains. Faith is very important. Imam Khomeini continued. He said, for the reason of the creation of the Islamic government, he also said the reason of how the Islamic government will be preserved. He said, as long as you keep this faith, the Islamic nation will be preserved. Nothing will happen to it. If you're worried about America bombing Iran, if you're worried about Israel bombing Iran, if you're worried about Iran being taken over from within, the only time that that would be possible, the only time that they would be defeated, is if they lose faith. And that's the same for us in America or wherever we are. As long as we have faith, we will be strong. Once we lose faith, we become weak and the enemy can destroy us. Faith is our only safeguard, it's our only protector. Faith in Allah. He continued, he said, if you have faith, you will be the highest form of creation. Which is an interesting point. Believers, mu'mineen, people who have faith, they're the best forms of creation. They're better than the angels. They're better than everything else that Allah created. A human being who has faith. But a human being who is a disbeliever, who rejects faith, who fights against Islam and fights against faith, they're worse than the worst kind of animals. They're worse than dogs and pigs, or whatever we consider the worst type of animal. Faith is what gives us humanity. It can make us higher than the angels or lower than the animals. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala. Now this divine sunnah that I'm talking about, this victory that's given to the believers, it's a conditional sunnah, which means it has conditions on it. Some divine sunnahs are unconditional. They happen no matter what. This one is conditional. This one, there's three conditions that have to happen for victory to be given to the believers. One of them is clear, we already talked about it. The first condition is faith. A believer must have correct faith in order to be victorious. That means that we have to think about what we believe in. We have to think about Allah, about prophethood, about imamat, about, what's it called, the day of judgment. We have to think about this. We have to strengthen our beliefs. If we have questions, because sometimes when we read Islamic books, or we listen to speeches, or we go attend Islamic lectures, classes, sometimes things might be confusing to us. Sometimes we might not understand something. We have a question. It's very important for us to answer these questions. When I was in Qom, in the first year of studying in the Hausa, we had theology classes. And the teacher I had was a very good teacher. What he said to me, it kept with me from that day till now. He said, look, he addressed the whole class. He said, I'm teaching you about the existence of God. We're going to go over the different proofs of why Allah exists, one by one. If you have a question, it's your duty to ask it. If you don't understand something, if you can't accept something that I say, it's your duty to ask about it. If you ask me, I promise you, I will try to give you the answer. If the answer that I give you does not satisfy you, you have to go search it for it elsewhere. Ask another scholar. Ask someone more knowledgeable than me. Read books. Find the answer. Do not leave yourself with a question. Here in the West, yes, we don't have access to scholars as you would if you were in Qom. But there are scholars here. There are people who can try to answer your question. But you don't have to limit yourself to Los Angeles. You have the internet, you can email people. If you want, you can take my email, and if I am unable to answer the question, I'll find someone who can answer it. You can, what's it called? You can find your answers, but the important thing is you ask your questions. Because if you don't ask your questions, if you keep this question mark on your heart, in your faith, your faith will slowly, slowly weaken. And if your faith weakens, you will be weak. You'll be able to be deceived. You'll be able to be overpowered by shaitan. Faith is something that has to be strong. So inshallah, if you have questions, inshallah ask them. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala. The second condition of this divine sunnah is helping Allah. There's a verse of Quran in Arabic, I don't know why I forgot it, but if you help Allah, He will help you. This is a verse of Quran. If you help Allah, He, Allah, will help you. Now, what does it mean, help Allah? Allah doesn't need our help, that's clear. Allah has no insufficiency, that's clear. There's nothing we could do which would be beneficial for Allah. But the verse tells us to help Allah. So when we look in the tafsir, we see what it means to help Allah. In the majority of tafsirs, they give us two different reasons. First one, helping Allah means helping His religion. Helping Allah means helping Islam. Propagating Islam, learning about Islam, teaching others about Islam. Doing what's best for Islam. This is what helping Allah means. Second thing that helping Allah means is helping His servants. helping the believers. When a brother or a sister is in need, we rush to their aid. When a brother and a sister need something that we have, we give it to them. When brothers and sisters across the globe are in need, we do what we can for them. Whatever abilities we have, we help. This is what helping Allah means. Imam Khomeini, the founder of the Islamic Revolution, he adds a third thing, and this is something that's exclusive to him. He's the only person that's mentioned this, at least that I've seen mention this, while explaining this verse. And he said, helping Allah means these two, and helping the oppressed, wherever they are, whoever they are, even if they're not Muslim. So if we help the oppressed, even the non-Muslim oppressed, in Latin America, in China, wherever they may be, we're helping Allah and we'll gain victory. So this is the second condition. Second condition was helping Allah. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala. The third condition is unity. Being unified. There's a number of verses in the Quran which state unity. For instance, وَتَسْمُ بَحَبْدِ اللَّهِ جَمِيعًا وَلَا تَفَرُّ. Hold fast to the divine cord all together and do not be divided. Do not divide yourselves. This is one verse that commands us to be unified. Now, unity is strong because when we're divided and fighting amongst each other, we're weak. The enemy can overtake us. We're not able to progress. But when we stop fighting with each other, we're able to move forward. Now, one of the things that I've seen in the West a lot, I've seen in Los Angeles when I used to grow up here, of course, I haven't lived here for a number of years, so I don't know if this has changed. When I go to the UK, I see it very much. In Iran, I see it. Everywhere I see it, is that Muslims give so much importance to the argument between Sunnis and Shias. That it seems that the most important thing to do for a Shia Muslim is to learn all of the reasonings of why Sunni Islam is incorrect. And to preach against it, to argue with Sunnis, to fight with Sunnis. It seems that's the case. I'm not saying it's not important. A Shia youth, a Shia adult, everyone who's Shia should know why they are Shia, should know why Imam Ali is the rightful successor, should know all of the Shia beliefs, should be able to support them for themselves. This is very important. I'm not saying don't teach your kids this. Teach them. I'm not saying don't teach the community this. Teach it. But what I'm saying is don't make it the number one focus of your life. Don't put this above everything else. There's some people in the UK, I promise you, 24 hours a day, all they're doing is talking about this issue. Every time I see them, they're talking about this issue. Every time they give a speech, it's about this issue. This is all they talk about. And then they're arguing with the Sunni brothers, the other Muslim sects, and Islam is not moving forward. They're forgetting about all of the other more important things that are happening in this world. And this is why unity is so key. This is why unity is a condition for our victory. If we're not unified, we will not be victorious. It's a condition. If we do not have unity, we will not reach our goals. This is clear as day. So inshallah, we'll try to unify with other, you know, sects of Islam. One thing that we could do when we have English programs, we can invite people of other, you know, madhab, of other sects. They could come here, they could sit, and they could listen. And if we invite the correct speakers, the speaker will not offend them. The speaker will be able to rationally explain things to them, be able to present our beliefs in a rational manner, which will not, you know, cause them to run away from Shia Islam. It's important. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala. So So basically today, what I'm saying in my speech is that we will be tested. If we pass the test, we'll be victorious. But we have to know that we're tested. Always. We're tested with good things and with bad things. We're tested with pleasures and with displeasures. We're tested with money and with poverty, with health and with sickness, with youth and with old age, with when we're married and when we're single. We're tested in every aspect of our lives. There's nobody here. Everything that we have is a test for us. Our children are tests for us. Our money are tests for us. Everything is a test. This is something that we have to ingrain in our minds and our hearts. It's something that we have to shape our lives around. We have to know that whatever decision we make, whatever action we perform, Allah is watching. It's a test. Allah is giving us something or taking away something to see how we react. If we pass, we're victorious. If we fail, we're failures. But we have to know that we're being tested. When in ziyarat, when we say, Ya laytana kunna ma'ak, oh, you know, we wish that we were with you. فَنَفُوزُ فَوْزًا عَظِيمًا. So we would gain the glorious victory. When we say this in ziyarat, do we mean it? We wish that we were with Hussein alayhi salam. We wish, but he's passed away, he's become shaheed. It's easy for us to wish that. We wish that we're with Imam Zaman alayhi salam, but he's not here yet. He hasn't returned yet. It's easy for us to say that. But now, today, we have to wish that we're with the Husseins of today. And we have to fight the Yazids of tomorrow. We have to be serious about this. It's serious. Now, inshallah, today, I wanted to speak a little bit more about Imam Hussein alayhi salam. I wanted to tell the story of what happened after everyone had passed away, after only Imam Hussein alayhi salam remained. And this, inshallah, if we could turn the lights off, it would be, what's it called? This is the last night before Ashura. So inshallah, we could try to feel this in our hearts. We can try to cry a little bit for Imam Hussein. Now, after Abbas alayhi salam was murdered, after he became shaheed, we know that Imam Hussein was alone. Imam Hussein, he looked around. All he saw were the bodies of his friends, the bodies of his family. Everyone had passed away. All he heard were the cries of the orphans, the cries of his children, the cries of the women. It was very difficult for him. And at this point, he yelled out. He said, Hal man tansurni, is there anyone to help me? Is there anyone to help the sanctity of Rasulullah? Is there anyone that wants to seek the pleasure of Allah by rescuing us? No one was left. But it was said that Imam Sajjad alayhi salam, who was very sick, he could barely walk, it was said that he stood up, he was holding his cane and he was trying to move forward. He couldn't even hold a sword. But because Imam Hussein alayhi salam said that, he tried to move forward. Imam Hussein, he told his daughter Umm Kulthum to hold him back, lest all of the progeny of the Rasulullah would be taken away. Then Imam Hussein, he bid his farewells with his family. He said goodbye to his children, to his wives, and he went forward for battle. At first, he asked for the one-on-one fights, for the duels, and he fought the enemy one after the other. He kept chopping them down and they couldn't fight him. Finally, he charged the enemy's army. As he charged, he was saying that death is better than shame, and shame is better than the hellfire. And he fought very bravely, and the enemy couldn't contain him. So Umar ibn Sa'd decided to shoot arrows at him. He shot a barrage of arrows, hundreds of arrows. It said in some hadiths, it said thousands of arrows were shot at Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Some of them hit him, many of them didn't. But after that, he returned to the tents. He returned to bid the final farewell. When he bid the final farewell, it was the end. He knew he was dying. He knew it was over. And the women were surrounding him. They didn't want him to go. But it said that Umar ibn Sa'd, in this state, shot arrows at him when the women were still around him. The women then ran back into the tents. Imam Hussein was struck with arrows in his chest, in his neck. He got shot so much that he couldn't defend himself anymore. The army surrounded him. They started hitting him one by one from all different angles. He fell to the floor. They hit him in his arms, they hit him in his chest, they hit him with swords, they threw rocks at him. It was terrible. Then a little boy, 11-year-old boy, Abdullah ibn Hassan, the son of Imam Hassan alayhi salam, he ran out. He got past Zainab. Zainab was trying to hold him back, but he got past. He ran out, he jumped in between the enemies and Imam Hussein, a little child. And he said, "This is Hussein, this is the grandson of the Prophet, what are you doing?" But the enemies didn't listen. The enemies took their swords out and continued to swing. He jumped in front of them. He blocked one of the strikes with his arm, which became severed. He fell into Imam Hussein's lap. Imam Hussein told him, "Don't worry, you'll be raised with your grandfather, with the Prophet." And then Harbala came and shot him with an arrow, killed the little 11-year-old child. Then it was only Imam Hussein. He was the only one left. The enemies surrounded him. They attacked him. They did all kinds of terrible things to him. Finally, Shimmer jumped on his chest, grabbed his beard, took his knife out. Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un. May Allah curse the oppressive army. May Allah help us to be true to ourselves. May Allah help us to get closer to Him. May Allah help us to be with Imam Zaman when he comes back, to be in his army, to stand by his side. May Allah help us to get closer to him through these lectures, through these speeches, through this Muharram. And may Allah bless our leader, Sayyid Ali al-Khamenei.
For the health and well-being of Sheikh Hamid, please recite a salawat. Please stand for Ziyarat.